neighbor over here doesn't have their stuff together. Look at them. They got their car up on blocks. They must not be living right. You know, whatever it is. It's real easy. It's real easy once we've been sown into the family to start judging those who aren't quite in that place yet. It's a very, very precarious situation that we can find ourselves in. And I would caution us against that. Because when you do the things that God would have us do, like, you know, tithe, come home after work, you know, not off in the wild things of the world, you know, pay your bills on time, deal in honesty, deal with people up front, you know, show up at work, work hard, keep your temper, take the counsel of others, you know, maintain relationships and honor relationships. You do those sort of things, good things start happening around you and good things start to happen. Well, not everyone's figured that out. Not everyone's figured out what God would have them to do, and or not everyone's living by the word. And, you know, if they're not in a place, if they're not quite in the place that you are at or I'm at, it is not on us to be the judge. It's on us to love and to help and to look on people and remember that it probably wasn't long ago that you and I were out of place and we didn't have our stuff together. And maybe our picture wasn't quite as pretty. So we can remember that. In Matthew chapter 22, and go ahead and turn, if you will, Matthew 22, verse 36. Matthew 22, verse 36, it says, "Master, which of the great commandments, which is the great commandment in the law?" Verse 37, Jesus said unto them, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." If we can just learn to love God with all of our heart and love our neighbor as ourselves, the scripture here says that everything else hangs on that, all the law and all the prophets. You know, the central theme in these verses in Matthew here is the theme of love. Love your neighbor, love God, love God, love your neighbor. We could spend all our energy just on that right there, and we'd probably be just fine. To love means to be vulnerable. To open yourself up. To love God means to depend on Him fully. Obedience, it means trust. To let go of our own abilities. Who thinks that love has anything to do with letting go and being obedient? It shows our dependence on God when we can do that. To love your neighbor or to love others, it means to be open to them. It means to open yourself up to potential hurt or being done wrong. You know, a lot of times we guard ourselves against opening up to people because we think maybe they'll step on that. It means to give of ourselves, to be tolerant, and expect nothing in return. Love means to expect nothing in return. And here's a thought, and I'm going to say it slowly. Love isn't about trading equal transactions until we are net-net the same. It's not about a give and take. It's about a give and give. And I'll just give you an example. If we were to trade net-net with God, if He loved us and then we had to love Him back equally, or He blessed us and we had to bless Him back equally, we'd never reconcile that relationship. That's not a relationship of love. That's a relationship. That's a business relationship. That's a relationship of trading. That's a transactional relationship. That's not what we have with God. We have a love relationship where He gives and He gives and He gives and He gives and He gives. And He's asked from us. He's asked for obedience. At the end of the day, that's really what He's asked for from us, obedience. And He just gives. So some people are very guarded about opening up and being vulnerable. Just remember that not everyone had the most stable situation. A lot of people have been hurt. And when they're guarded against the relationships and can't open up, that can also translate to their ability to open up and to trust God. You know, some of you were very fortunate in your lives and you had a father figure that you fully trusted in your home. You had a dad that you fully depended on. You knew they'd always be there. You knew they were doing everything they could for you. If you've got that relationship with a father, you're very blessed, because that was a picture of God in your life. And that was a situation where you could correlate your dad with what God was doing in your life. And you may not realize that those connections were there, but they were there. Many people grew up in situations where they didn't have that. So when you start to form a relationship with God, you have to get this whole counting on, this whole depending on and trusting thing is a whole nother leap. It's a whole nother step. So my point here is just remember that we're not all starting from the same place. And some people have to take a longer trip to get to the perfect relationship that maybe you have with God. And we got to be patient with each other. And we got to be tolerant with each other. And we got to love one another in those situations. You know, the Lord called me down an aisle at Ramron First Baptist Church when I was 11 years old. I really didn't know much about any of this. I had a great mom, and many of you know my mom. Couldn't ask for a better mother. We were around church, but we weren't necessarily in church. I didn't have a lot of, you know, time in the Bible or that sort of thing. We were surviving, and we were surviving pretty well. You know, I got no complaints. But when I started going to church with friends and stuff, and my mom was going as well, I was starting to maybe learn a little bit, learn fragments, but I didn't learn enough to get saved. I didn't understand the principles enough to say, okay, now I've got this all figured out, I'm going to accept God. I had a Holy Spirit connection, conviction in my life that told me, you're missing something. There's something here for you. And I walked down the aisle and I got saved. And that hole was filled. But there was a whole body of stuff that I had to figure out in how to trust God and how to learn to live for God and how to trust other people and how to, you know, I remember coming to Liberty Baptist Church many years later, and maybe I wasn't in the best situation at that time, but I remember thinking, this can't be right. What's the angle? What are they up to? What are they trying to get out of me? What is this deal? And it turned out they were just following these principles here, and they were just loving people. And they really didn't want anything in Liberty didn't want anything in return. It was just about loving people and helping people find a life with Christ. There is no telling where I would be if I didn't have Christ in my life, and if I didn't have this ministry to have guided me through all the years. There's no doubt I would have made different decisions through my professional career, through my young adult life, that would have put me in misery. And some of them were hard decisions where I had to say no. Some of them were easy decisions, but all of them were necessary decisions to keep me in a place where God could bless me. We've all got those things. You know, I look around what's happening in the world today, and it really confuses me. You know, we recently had another school shooting. I know everybody saw that on the news. And it really confuses me. In a country that was founded on Christianity, and in a place where we're the most prosperous of any other country in the world, in an environment where we've got all the opportunity and all the freedom that we can afford, we are the country that has the epidemic of mass shootings and school shootings and domestic terrorism, people just doing heinous crimes to masses of people. It really confuses me that this prosperity that we have has put us in that place. It makes me think about, you know, kind of the concept of good and evil. it makes me think a lot about what is happening in the United States that would cause these things to happen. Now, if it happened once 20 years ago, that's one thing. But we're getting two or three of these a year. And it's getting more frequent and it's getting more common. It's getting to the point to where we may shake our head, we may bow for a minute, but it's starting to become normalized. That is scary. That is scary for the state of our world. And I can tell you I'm not wise enough to deconstruct it, to make it into anything meaningful. I don't really know how to explain it or offer any comfort around it, and I'm pretty confused just like anybody else. And, you know, when you look around the last few weeks and people talking about this latest shooting and everyone's asking why and they really don't have the answers, I think back in 2017, I guess it was not a school shooting, but it was the attack in Vegas where there was a concert going on and a gentleman got up in a building and fired down on the crowd. And it was a pretty terrible act. And I remember during that time, it affected a lot of people, and there was a lot of dialogue around that particular event. I think because it was just so many folks that were impacted. It was filmed. Everything was very highly publicized. But there was a kind of a national dialogue around kind of the word evil, because everyone just saw it as evil. It wasn't a child; it was an adult, and that adult had made some decisions and it put a lot of people in a great deal of unexplainable pain. I remember the president at the time in 2017 said it was an act of pure evil. And I was kind of watching the conversation, you know, as people would have dialogue on TV, and the dialogue around evil, I thought, well, this is going to be a national dialogue where we kind of dissect this idea of evil. But the conversation faded very quickly away from just evil to things like gun control, bump stocks control. Some of you rednecks know what that is. It kind of went political, and the thought of evil just didn't play in the dynamic anymore. 1 Peter 5:8 says for us to be sober, be vigilant, because our adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. We got to understand from Scripture that there is an enemy out there looking to devour us. And these acts that are happening do have a threat of evil through them. And here's the problem. In order to acknowledge evil on the grand scale, you have to acknowledge good. You have to acknowledge there's a difference between good and evil. If there is darkness, if we acknowledge that darkness exists, then we have to collectively acknowledge that light exists. Everything has a contrary. You can't say there's dark and deny that there's light. If there's bad, then there must be good. If there's a wrong way, then there must be a right way. And this is foreign nowadays. It's all just whatever's good for you is good, and it's just good. And, you know, people are identifying as things that they weren't born as, and in some cases, not even the same species that they were born as. Why are we so confused as a nation? What is going on? And I'm not trying to judge anyone. I'm just saying, what is going on in our minds if someone can identify as an inanimate object and be acknowledged as that in their lives? And I'm not going to start naming things because I'm not trying to be funny. This is weird. This is evil sitting into our culture. To acknowledge a deep darkness, we must acknowledge degrees of darkness. If there's a layer of darkness that's worse than others, then there must be degrees of darkness. If there are degrees of darkness, then how does that reflect in my life? If there's degrees of darkness out there, then what am I doing around darkness? And on how I view others. How do I view others on my tolerance toward others and their choices? You know, we're becoming a nation. We say we're a nation of tolerance and we're trying to teach tolerance. We don't have the clear lines that we once did. That's for sure. We accept socially a lot in the name of tolerance, but we're not showing a lot of mercy in all this tolerance. I find it very interesting that a lot of the folks that are demanding tolerance right now, they don't have a lot of tolerance for other people that don't share their views. If you want to get attacked, there's about three things you can say out in public that used to be common speech amongst just, you know, good old common people. And if you want to see people just pounce on you, just say the wrong thing that 10 years ago would have been just fine, or 15 years ago would have been just fine. And they're looking for tolerance, but they're not willing to give tolerance for alternate views. I'll just say, for an example, a white male Christian is often made to feel guilty in this new movement, as if guilty of some crime just for waking up in his skin. Well, Randy, does that make you prejudiced? No, I'm just saying that sometimes, as a white male, I'm just going to go ahead and say it out loud so y'all can be sensitive to me. I feel discriminated against because I woke up in this skin. And I've actually been in environments where I was trying to be convinced to feel guilty for all the privilege that I've had while in this skin. Now, I acknowledge there's some privilege, okay? I'm not saying there's not. But I'm just saying that why does skin color or the family that you're born into have to matter? And just because you can see my skin color or a button-up white shirt or some presumed advantage, that doesn't mean you know my story or you know my journey or you know my struggles. Just like if I look on someone else that may have a certain dress or a certain look, doesn't mean I can call out their character or I can call out their pain or I can call out their situation or I can put judgment on them. A person shouldn't be judged by shouldn't a person be judged by the merit of their character? I mean, that sounds familiar, right? That's what we've been asking for. That's what's been asked for generations, for all of the above. And I think people should be judged by the merit of their character. And I think we, as Christians, owe it to one another to let people stand on their own two feet and not put people in categories. Jesus, he was intolerant. Did y'all know that? But he was merciful. There were some things he was intolerant to, but he was always acting in love. Let me just give you some thoughts here. The woman that was caught in adultery over in John 8, Jesus said, "Let he who is without sin do what? Cast the first stone." Those with no authority were judging. Those who needed mercy were given no mercy. The one with the full authority to judge chose not to judge and gave full mercy. Jesus said, "Where are thine accusers?" He said, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." In this evil, in this situation, Jesus said, "Do it no more. Go and sin no more." He was intolerant to that sin, but he showed complete mercy in that situation. You ever heard the saying that the little foxes spoil the vine? That comes from Song of Solomon 2, verse 15. "Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." You see, we're pretty good at pointing out evil in other people. We're pretty good at pointing out evil when it looks different than us. Sometimes we assume there is any evil in things that are different from us. That implies that somehow we're good. There's probably not always evil in something that's just different. It's easy for us to spot the carnage and the aftermath after a lion has been on the scene. You know, that kind of evil and carnage is easy to identify. Where we struggle, I'll argue, is in the quiet evil, the quiet stuff, the stuff that's socially acceptable. You know, and think about socially acceptable is it changes from generation to generation. What was taboo 10 years ago is okay now. And we place judgments in those things. But biblically, God doesn't change. So the definition of what's wrong doesn't change. And none of us can live up to the law. So like the woman accused in adultery and caught in adultery, we can see the sin in others. But we don't always see the sin in ourselves. If y'all will turn to Matthew 7, I think this one's worth actually reading together. Matthew 7, verse 3. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. So the thought of my lesson here is we should see, we should call evil evil. We should be intolerant to both the large and the small stuff, to both the roaring lion evil and the subtle evils. But here's where we need to be careful. We need to be careful with setting the standards and taking a hard line. We're human beings, and we're made of flesh. We put these standards on others, and that's not our job. We name sin that is not in our house or in our lives and spend energy on it. And if we're not careful, we'll be pointing at all the folks that don't look like us, that don't look like the nice quilt and blanket, as Brother Ken showed. We'll put our standards on other people. And if you want to push someone that's unchurched away from church further and further, then just start putting your convictions on them and start making them feel like they don't measure up or they don't have a chance to measure up. Or maybe the way they look is not quite the way they should look, or maybe make them feel out of place in this environment, and you'll push them away so fast you'll never see them again. That's not where we're supposed to be, and that's not what we're supposed to be about. That's one reason we can struggle to connect in a real way. Remember, we have to remember what it was like to be a remnant. We have to remember what it was like to not fit. We have to remember what it was like to not belong and pull people in and love them. So I'd offer a challenge. I believe there's enough work for us all to do in the mirror. And we could put all of our energy on that thing that we see right there in the mirror. And that would consume all my time and all my energy. And I could point out all the wrongs in that guy. And there's enough darkness for me to battle with for a lifetime. I don't need to worry about your darkness or your darkness or your darkness or your darkness. That's not for me to fix. It's not for me to point out. It's not for me to own. It's not for me to spend energy on. It's not for me to use to break you down. Oh my goodness, the energy that's put into breaking other people down. I find it really funny that folks that put their energy, and God forbid if we fall into this camp, you know, bringing other people down. Why would you put energy into bringing someone else down? It's probably because you are either trying to get them down so you won't feel so jealous, or so we won't feel so jealous. But that implies, you know what that implies? They're ahead of you because you need them to come down, or we need them to come down. So every time we're spending our energy trying to pull somebody down, then we're just telling on ourselves that we're not where we believe we need to be. We're nobody's judge. You know, we're held to a very high standard as Christians. 1 Thessalonians 5:22 says, abstain from all appearance of evil. That's a tough one. Well, Randy, that's not wrong. I can do that. I can socially drink. I'm not going to get drunk. What's wrong with that? I mean, Jesus made water into wine. Doesn't that make it okay that, you know, he's condoning social drinking? What am I going to say next? Well, I don't have the answers to all that. So you can put your pen down if you're taking notes, because I may not be able to answer that question for you, but I'll tell you how I reconcile it. Let's just say that some things are socially acceptable over different times and different generations. Well, if I'm doing something today that's not socially acceptable, that's viewed as a sin, whether it is or not, I'm not judging whether certain things are sins, but if I'm putting myself in a place to where, you know, I'm making it look like I'm a little rougher, or I'm a little tougher, or I've got a little bit of an edge on myself, or I'm looking maybe a little rebellious in that situation, or maybe a little loose, you know, pick your word. If I'm creating that appearance in my life and maybe damaging my witness, am I abstaining from all appearances of evil? No, I'm not. To abstain from all appearances of evil means to consider the things around you, consider the context of our actions, and to protect our witness, and abstain, actually not do things not that are evil, and not do things that appear evil, because it hurts others. So you can be principled on that thing that you think is okay. Maybe you've convinced yourself smoking's okay. Maybe you convinced yourself dipping's okay. I don't care. I don't care about any of those things. I'm not your mama, and I'm not going to follow you around, and I'm not taking records, and I'm not even on Facebook, so I'm not going to see you there. But don't convince yourself that something that society deems as evil is okay, because the Bible says to abstain from all appearances of evil. And I bet you, if we looked in the mirror, we've got enough of those things. We've got enough darkness. We've got enough jealousy. We've got enough mess in our lives to where we could probably spend all of our energy and never even have any energy left to fix somebody else. We should let the Bible name sin and not put our convictions on others. I haven't had alcohol for almost 30 years now. I'm not bragging. That's part of my journey. That was a change in my life. And we just talked about, you know, social drinking. I have a lot of opportunities to socially drink. A lot of my work situations put you close to someone who's drinking in a networking environment where you could better your situation if you just conform with that environment. I don't go. I'm not there. It's been long enough to where a lot of people know I'm not going to be there, and they don't even ask. They don't know why, or I just say I don't drink. It's just not my thing. Sometimes I get a little more blunt with it, but it's a decision. It's a decision, and I'm not bragging. I know what my limitations are. I know where I've been. I know what kind of a mess that can create in my life. It's a real thing, and I know what commitments I have to God, and I believe what I heard Charles Stanley say, that God can handle and God will own any consequences of my obedience and of your obedience. So if there's something lost by not participating in that situation, I bet God can net it out somehow if he chooses to. I don't bet he can. I know he can. And I don't bet he will. I know he will. And I could give you stories, but we don't have enough time. We've got a big God, and he can be there fighting for you, making a way for you, based on just the fact that you were obedient in the right situations for him. Does it make it easy? Well, Randy, you're an adult. You shouldn't have to worry about what people think about you. I know that's what a lot of young people think, that peer pressure and, you know, your status amongst your peers goes away maybe in high school. It really doesn't. I mean, you're always trying to, you know, there's always a sense of belonging that you want to have, and there's always that pull. And that's a pull that we all have to fight and we all have to understand the things that are most important in our lives. So across the nation, generation after generation, you know, people have tried to convince themselves if it doesn't hurt anyone, it isn't wrong. If it makes me happy, it can't be bad. It's my life. I can do what I want with it. It doesn't hurt anybody else or bother anybody else. But it's the little foxes that destroy the vineyard. If our country and our lives are going to bear fruit, we have to know the difference between good and evil. We have to understand that there's an actual right, there's an actual wrong. Not just in the decisions we make personally, but in there are absolutes. It's not our job to put our convictions on others, but it is our job to put standards on ourselves. So Hillary Clinton said, sorry, everybody's skin just crawled, I know that. Oh my goodness, I lost y'all. Just stay just a little bit longer, okay? I promise I won't use Hillary Clinton's name again. She said, I got to give credit where credit's due because this is a good statement. The United States is great because the United States is good. I don't know if somebody probably wrote that for her, but it's the smartest thing I've ever heard her say. And I apologize for that moment. But in our lives, you know, we have to choose a path. How are we going to bear fruit in our lives? What fruit are we going to bear? What do we have to, we have to know the difference between good and evil. We have to run from evil, and we have to seek righteousness. These are very basic concepts. But if we're not actively doing it every day, if we're not actively making those decisions in our lives, then we'll find ourselves in a mess. Keep our judgment off of others. We are not their judge. Just try judging yourself as hard as you... I should try judging myself as hard as I judge others for a couple of days and just see how I feel. See how much I want to be around me. God loves us and wants the best for us. I pray that you all have that in your lives. I love you. I appreciate your attention tonight. And I hope you have a